From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Donald Trump and the Republican Party's attacks on American democracy have left us reeling, but there are democratic struggles happening all over the world, and today we'll focus on two countries in Latin America. First, the Central American nation of Honduras has just sworn in a president that civil society organizations and election monitors are convinced retained his power via a stolen election. Incumbent Juan Orlando Hernandez has begun his second term amid massive protests that began during the vote count in the last election and are continuing today. The election result appears to be part of a long-term move to the right that began after the coup against President Manuel Zelaya in 2009. Then in Brazil, Latin America's largest nation and the fourth largest democracy in the world, former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva is facing a new setback. A court has just reaffirmed Lula's corruption conviction, a move that many fear is an attempt to silence the popular former president and prevent him from running in the next election. Lula's Workers' Party had been ousted from power by a right-wing takeover last year. My guest is Vicky Cervantes. She is the North America coordinator for the Honduras Solidarity Network. She's also a member of La Voz de los de Abajo, Chicago. Welcome to the program, Vicky.
Hi, thank you so much, Sonali.
So let's start first with Honduras. We've been covering the story about the election with somebody who had been an election monitor and really following along with what actually happened or seemed to happen during the process of counting the votes. What has unfolded since Saturday and really even on Saturday when Juan Orlando was inaugurated for his next term?
Sure. And I was also in Honduras for 3 weeks during the election process and came back for Christmas. And it was an impressive fraud, to say the least, and repression. And it hasn't gotten any better. On Saturday, the opposition, the citizens of Honduras, and the political opposition and social movements made it very clear that they were going all out to try and not block physically so much, but make clear their rejection of Juan Orlando Hernandez as the president and that they would not accept his authority. So they had a very massive march in Tegucigalpa in one place. And as they started, it was a peaceful march. As they were started marching just in the general direction of where the imposition ceremony was being held, the military police and national police and riot police massed and threw amazing quantities of tear gas into a tunnel that people were marching through. So the tunnel had the effect of magnifying the effects of the tear gas. They also fired live ammunition and dispersed the protest, which gathered in other places later during the day. Juan Orlando's ceremony was held in the National Stadium, nearly an empty stadium, not attended by most representatives of most countries, and no heads of state, except, I believe, Malta. And entirely militarized. And that's one thing that's become really clear is that over the years, the amount of military power that the government of Honduras under Juan Orlando Hernandez has accumulated is massive and amazing for a country that is not actually at war.
So it looks like a country at war on the inside, I understand.
Yes, we saw this even during the election, but to a lesser extent. The country was militarized. There were jeeps with machine guns mounted on them, roaming the streets, especially of the opposition neighborhoods, the poorer neighborhoods. In the countryside, there were what they called tanquetes, the small armored tanks, roaming the villages and pushing people to the side. And then that has probably tripled, quadrupled. There were thousands of troops on Saturday, January 27th. There were thousands and thousands of troops from all the different branches of the security forces all over the country, in Tegucigalpa, San Pedro Sula, but also out in the villages and the countryside, repressing the protests that were taking place.
So what is the next move for Salvador Nasrallah, the election candidate that had been poised to win the election, whose lead over Juan Orlando Hernandez in the early vote count was insurmountable? So what's the next, not just for him, but for his party, the movements that he represents, the coalition, I should say, that he represents, that's been backed by former President Manuel Zelaya?
Right. Well, I think right now the movements are in a moment of reassessing and creating tactics to deal with the situation, especially since it's also very clear that the United States, Canada, other major governments that are responsible for so much money going into the Honduran government are absolutely standing by Juan Orlando Hernandez. There's not even a crack at this point in their support. The movements have also made it clear that they will not stop protesting and that they will not accept the authority of the government. Exactly how they're going to define this new campaign of defiance of governmental authority has yet to be seen. But they have been holding protests. There was a protest, I believe it was Sunday evening, a vigil led by the Jesuit priest Padre Melo from Radio Progreso, a well-known progressive organization in Honduras, where there were many hundreds of people outside the U.S. embassy protesting the U.S. involvement. So they've also been taking street corners again, blocking traffic. So I think we can count on the fact that this is going to continue. It remains to be seen what new tactics or how the movement is going to decide to press this further. There are some chances. There is pressure being weighed inside the Organization of American States, whose general secretary, right after the election, when the fraudulent results were announced, called for a new election to be held. But that request or petition has gone nowhere, and it remains to be seen if there's any room to maneuver inside the Organization of American States. In general, Colombia, Mexico, Panama, the U.S., Canada have all strongly supported the dictatorship. But people are still on the radios, in the streets, denouncing Juan Orlando as a dictator.
Let's talk about Brazil, the other Latin American country that we have been covering, the sort of democratic struggle there over the past year, where the right-wing takeover was cemented with the leadership of Michel Temer. It's just uncanny to see the incredible audacity there too of the right wing, where those politicians who have been found to be engaging in the same kind of corruption that they've accused their rivals of retain power, while the Workers' Party, the left-leaning Workers' Party, Dilma Rousseff and Lula, are being accused of corruption. What do you make of this latest setback for Lula, which many see as a setback for the party as a whole, with Lula's corruption conviction upheld by a court? So basically he's lost his appeal now.
Right. That was on the 24th, January 24th, the appeals court handed down its decision. And not only did they maintain the conviction, but they actually added prison time to his original sentence. So now that it's up to 12 years instead of 10. So they took even a harsher position. Again, without there being any concrete, hardcore evidence of his alleged corruption. I think what it shows, and I also understand that on either the same day or the next day, corruption charges were dropped against a number of well-known politicians from the right-wing parties. So I don't think the message could be any clearer that what's at stake for the right wing, for the United States as well, which totally supports the going after the Workers' Party in Brazil, what's at stake is to maintain a neoliberal agenda and to attempt to crush significant left or center-left political opposition. And in Brazil, Lula is the front-running candidate in all the polls. He would easily win an election if he were allowed, if he is allowed to run.
And that seems to be the main reason why he is being targeted. So then the question is now, is this conviction and the adding of the prison sentence an end of his political career? Is it possible he could run from inside prison? I mean, stranger things have happened in other countries.
Right. Well, he does, in the legal realm, he can still appeal it yet again. I don't know what, how many appeals he can do, but there is at least one more left. He is saying that he will run for president no matter where he is, no matter whether it's from prison or in liberty. That would make things very interesting in Brazil, for sure, because of the massive support that he has from the social movements, from a large majority of the people. So that also remains to be seen. Also, what other maneuvers the judicial system in Brazil, which is the strongest branch of government and totally controlled by the right wing, what other maneuvers they might try. I think the message I take from all of this is, of course, it's not actually about corruption in Brazil, and it's not actually about the U.S. or anyone else from the right wing, certainly, defending democratic processes. Because if it were Juan Orlando Hernandez in Honduras, whose party has been, part of them have been convicted of stealing $330 million from the health system, his newly appointed head of the police, the national police, is implicated in working with the drug cartels. And he just stole an election and has the country at war. He would be being prosecuted for corruption. And Lula, who has not done any of those kind of things, would be free to run for election. So I think it's pretty clear that there's a lot of hypocrisy involved. But it's also a very consistent position, which is to try and take down the movements in Latin America that have attempted to fight back against austerity and privatization, for example.
Is there a backup plan if Lula is simply unable to run? Does he have a successor lined up in the Workers' Party that might be a surrogate for him? And because in the end, it's not really him, but the policies that he espoused as president that were, you know, not even that radical, but sort of left, center left. So can Lula has he put forward a surrogate?
I have not seen any surrogate put forward. I think that would be an interesting and perhaps effective strategy. And of course, there are lots of leaders in the PT, in the Workers' Party.
And actually, Jacobin magazine recently interviewed Fernando Haddad, who is rumored to be the Worker Party's plan B as a possible Lula stand-in.
Right. I think in terms of the public discussion in Brazil right now, everything is focused on fighting to free Lula and for him to be allowed to win.
Vicky, finally, what is the common thread here? I mean, we're just talking about Honduras and Brazil, but Latin America as a whole had seen a wave of left-wing electoral gains, only to now this past decade see many setbacks to those gains. Is there a common thread in terms of American influence and American dominance to see sort of neoliberal capitalist forces beat back using electoral processes to beat back left-wing power?
Yes, I think there most definitely is. And I think that what we're seeing is the empire strikes back. And that's not to say that there haven't been problems, contradictions, economic and political problems in many of the countries that have experimented with what they were calling 21st century socialism and an anti-neoliberal project. But what we're seeing, and I think we saw the first blow in Latin America, in Spanish-speaking Latin America, in the 2009 coup in Honduras after the failed coup in 2002 against Hugo Chavez. There was a period where I think the empire and the right wing were reorganizing and they came back with a vengeance. Now we're seeing them, they've developed all sorts of tools for modern coups. The straight up front military coup in 2009 in Honduras, the parliamentary coup against Lugo in Paraguay. They're using the court systems to decapitate and to debilitate the politicians and the parties that have fought against the neoliberal agenda in Latin America. And I think it's a straight line in terms of U.S. policy and their alliance with the right wing in Latin America. And it's a straight line that's aimed at implementing more privatization, more austerity, turning back any of the gains in Brazil, for example, the gains that were made in poverty alleviation, in economic participation by the poorest sectors of Brazil, and that's the common thread in Honduras, and in Brazil, and they're also now going after Kirchner and other leaders, even Bachelet, who was very centrist. But they are using the courts now to prosecute anybody they feel could constitute an electoral or political challenge.
Hmm. Well, Vicky, give out a website for the Honduras Solidarity Network, your organization.
Yes, you can search Honduras Solidarity Network, and it will pop up. And we also we're on Facebook, Honduras Solidarity Network. And we are right now organizing a lot of activities in solidarity with this movement in this crisis that we're facing, a crisis of terrible human rights violations. There are more than 40 people who have been assassinated by the military police since the election, November 26th. There are political prisoners, and it shows no sign of ending. So we welcome anyone who's interested in learning more or doing anything with the solidarity work and to push back against the U.S. government support for dictatorship. Please look us up.
I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Vicky.
Thank you so much, Lonali.
Vicky Cervantes is the North America coordinator for the Honduras Solidarity Network and a member of La Voz de los de Abajo, Chicago. We've been discussing democratic struggles in Honduras and Brazil. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.